Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of Point Taken. I am Steve. She is Kristen.
We're here.
Ready for this. You know, I love the four-day work weeks. I could really get used to a shorter work week.
Could you do 3 days?
I could do 3 days. Stay tuned.
Which 3 days would you take?
That would be middle of the week.
Okay.
So you'd leave. Every weekend.
Not Thursday, Friday, not Monday, Tuesday. You'd take Monday and Friday off.
I would miss the guys, but I think you'd be okay with just the guys.
I'd be okay with just the guys.
I mean, those guys could probably do the show themselves, let's be honest.
I think they have done the show themselves.
Have they?
I think so. Once or twice.
Jess has one. Yeah, I didn't. When was that?
That was during the Political Power Hour.
I think it was pre-me.
Oh, yeah. When it was only an hour. 90 minutes, a little bit different.
A little bit different, yeah.
And we know 2 hours.
They might have done 2 hours once.
All right. Stop challenging me, Jazz. Just teasing Jazz. All right. Great show today. We always have Jerry Maginini. We always have that in our back pocket because he comes and talks about all the local stuff. Latest on Marty Brooks. Ears perked up. We don't know anything.
I don't think we know anything yet.
He's got some thoughts on that as far as what a journalist can say or not say about what's happening with that situation. And then at 10:35-ish, he's a candidate. He's the only candidate on the Republican side now because Josh Shulman dropped out. By the way, I got to reach out to Josh about something. Just reminded myself. Not for air broadcast, but I just said it out loud.
We'll keep talking about it.
Anyway, so Tom Tiffany will join us in studio. Now, just for fun, we'll try to get to it. We're going to ask you right now, 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talking text line. If you were interviewing Tom Tiffany, what question would you ask him? And we'll just take a quick poll and see what the most common question is.
We'll see how similar they are to the questions we've already planned.
Because unlike what we usually do, we sort of each crafted our own separate list, and then we got together and sort of combined them and extrapolated from that. Because you only get 30 minutes.
And it goes quickly.
It does. And we have breaks in there and commercials and all that stuff. So if you
have a long-winded? I know we've had him on the phone. You've interviewed him more than I have.
Yeah, I would say average-winded.
Average-winded.
Yeah. Not too short. Not like terse or very quick, a little bit longer, but not like verbose.
But not like two questions in a segment, and they're like, oh, we got to go to commercial.
Yeah, because if Tom's listening, he may be listening on his way in, because I know they're en route. They just sent me a text. We want to get to a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I know that, because I read the Journal Sentinel piece with him, so his three pillars of what he wants to talk about today, and probably on the campaign trail, education, healthcare, transportation.
Well, I mean, I think he phrased it as a difference because he did a WisPolitics luncheon yesterday.
Yeah, I think so.
And his wants versus needs and framing it like a household budget as far as what are the things that we have to pay for and what are the things that are nice to haves if we have extra money.
Yeah,
and he said his three needs, education, healthcare, transportation.
Which are on people's minds. You and I have spent a lot of time talking about those things. Now, you don't have to keep texting about the election stuff.
We're going to ask him.
Right out of the gate, I'm going to ask him, get it out of the way. It's the one thing, one of maybe a couple of things, that when he gets in that arena of those 2020, you just lose me. I don't want to talk about it, but I have to ask the question.
So are you going to, if you start with that and he loses you, then where do we go?
What do you mean loses me?
If you ask that question out of the gate and you're like, that's where you lose me, how do you come back for the interview?
I just come back.
I'm joking, but I'm just saying.
I've done enough candidate interviews to know that they often are like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to say what I want to say. And I hope I know him well enough to know that he wants to tell our audience and Wisconsinites what he's about. He's the only guy on the other side. The other group, the Democrats, I mean, we don't even know who's winning or not winning, sort of. And we don't know what everybody stands for. I think this is pretty clear what Tom Tiffany stands for. He's a congressman, a conservative congressman. He's pro-Trump. I'll ask him the question, pro-MAGA. I'm sure
he certainly has a record, right?
Yes.
Being in Congress and all of his time in the state legislature.
So the questions are coming in. We will ask him about the tax relief package that got shot down a couple weeks ago. So all of that is sort of part of that 10:30 slot. After the break, this is one of those topics I just want to throw in because my beef with this administration is they spend a lot of time talking about stuff that's either not going to happen or is frankly a diversion from real things that Americans, Wisconsinites, care about. And do we really need another bill? Dollar bill? No. Not a $100 bill. A $250 bill.
Can pay for a tank of gas.
Yeah. Do we need that? Yeah. In a big SUV? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I saw my first $3.99 in a while. So
what did I pay over the weekend? I was like down to E. Because
you're waiting.
Well, because I procrastinated. I was like, I think I got another trip out of this. 65 in for my VW Tiguan.
Jeez.
I think that might be the maybe the most. I felt it.
This is where I'm so happy that my salesperson at Griffin talked me into a hybrid.
Yeah.
There's months I fill up once a month. Love that. And then I can be a little more careful about when I'm getting my gas tank filled because I can play that weight gain sometimes. But yeah, I was in Illinois last weekend or 2 weekends ago. It was 529, 549.
In Illinois. Yeah, the highest I've seen for regular here is 470 in the Milwaukee area. So we haven't, at least up here, we haven't broke five. I mean, yeah. Sure, diesel has, but I'm saying.
Yes.
But the cheap stuff I put in my car.
All right, coming up after the break, a bill. You might want to have one because it's money, but do we really need it? We'll discuss after this.
You know you're talking about a hot topic when your husband, not knowing what our lineup was today, he just texted me and he said, "The circus continues." And it's a tweet that says, "Justin, Trump administration moves to put President Trump on a new $250 bill," which was what we were already planning on talking about.
Yeah, two things. One, we don't need a $250 bill at all. Hundreds work just fine. Get them when I go to Vegas. Easy to use. We don't need it. Two, it's illegal.
It is illegal. If you did not know that after the last time we had any living presidents have their face put on currency, it was before 1866.
Yeah.
Fair Act? Civil War era. And then after that, they prohibited it. And now
Thayer Amendment is what it is.
Yeah. You cannot put living presidents on currency.
So, as I said before the break, if Joe Biden said or had said during his administration, you know what, I'm going to do a $300 bill or pick any, whatever denomination. What do you think conservative talkers would have said? Oh my God, why is he wasting our time with this nonsense? How much you want to make a bet? No conservative talkers are talking about that today in that context. So the litmus test needs to get back to if the other side said it, proposed it, did it, and you blew them up, shouldn't you do the same thing now? That would be consistency and not hypocrisy. This is stupid. And I don't know if this is the actual picture. It's that mugshot picture that he seems to really like. Was it Georgia? Stop. Enough with this stuff. Arch, reflecting pond.
I got the list.
Yeah,
all right.
Go.
Gold decor in the White House. New ballroom. New decorative arch. Renamed the Gulf. Renamed the Kennedy Center. Renamed the Department of Defense. Renamed the Institute of Peace. Installed signage under presidential portraits, including the auto pen. Marble armrest in the Kennedy Center. Battleships. His face on national park passes, his signature on currency, his picture on U.S. passports.
Airport Palm Beach, right?
Painting the reflecting pool, gold cards, his image on a 250th anniversary gold coin and
phone.
The bill.
Trump phone.
Well, that's a whole different business. That's a phone business that they're trying to start.
Yeah.
But there is something as far as like if you're forcing your legacy onto people, is it really a legacy?
No.
Like, if people aren't doing it in honor of you instead of you saying, I want this done, aren't those two different things?
Yes. I will say, even though I'm not a psychiatrist, I will psychoanalyze what this is. And, you know, the terms get thrown around a lot, narcissistic behavior and all that stuff. And, you know, idol worship on the other side, people appreciating this stuff, apparently. This is a president who's super pissed off about what he thinks people did to him in that period after his first term. And he's doing everything he can to shove it in your face. And the shove it in your face is all the things you just listed. And branding things by his name. I still think if there's a ballroom built, this president would try to have his name. Because if you've been to Vegas or other places around the country, Chicago, those five letters are primarily displayed on his properties. You don't think he'd do the same thing with his fascination with gold, the five-letter name on that ballroom? I think
would it be on the outside or the inside?
Outside.
Trump.
If you want to
on the outside of the White House.
If you want some homework away from the show, just Google, show me what the White House grounds look like right now. There's this absolutely area, the east side, just blown up with construction that's not going anywhere right now.
Well, they're also building the stage for the UFC
fight. On the other
fight.
Side, yeah, massive UFC fight.
Are you a UFC fan?
I've watched it. I don't pay money for it. It's not my thing.
Beating the crap out of each other?
Oh, there's a few people I like to beat the crap out of, but I'm a nonviolent person, so I'll just keep that in my head. I'm curious, though, and thanks for the great questions about for Congressman Tom Tifton. He's going to join us in just a few minutes. Keep those coming. We'll try to get him in. We only got a half hour. We got commercials, all that stuff. So we'll make it as packed. And for the congressman, short answers. Not
keep it tight.
Not two-word answers, unless you really are convicted on that answer. But let's get as much as we can, because he's been on the afternoon show with John and Julia, and I think our show, it's the only show she's been on here. I've interviewed him for my podcast. I've interviewed for other stuff since he's been a congressman. So we will discuss that with him. But if you haven't thought on what we just talked about, do you need a $250 bill, or is this an homage to a president who, let's be honest, calls himself the greatest president in U.S. history? Maybe I should ask Congressman that question. Is this the greatest president in U.S. history?
Would it be a collectible? It probably would be a collectible.
I guess.
At that point, is it really, like, I don't know. Because, I don't think you're going to carry 250, but obviously it's for the 250th anniversary.
Yeah, I get
but
it.
But, like, if you only print a certain amount, like, is it actual currency that's going to be distributed? Or if there's a finite amount, then it becomes a collectible, right?
Yeah.
It's worth more than $250.
Yeah, true. Given the environment in this country, it's either a $250 collectible or a $250 target that you put a pin on and shoot at from various ranges.
Or you frame it.
Yeah. Interesting times we live.
Polarized times.
All right, we'll take a break and wrap up the first half hour Point Taken, Chris and Steve, on 620 WTMJ. We're talking about the idea of a Trump $250 bill, and maybe it's just a commemorative thing for the 250th anniversary.
Like, what would you?
What's $250? What would that be? What
do you spend $250 on? There's plenty of things that are $250. You know, there's like pairs of jeans that are $250.
No jeans that I'm buying are going to cost me $250.
That I buy either.
No.
There's a pair of like some really nice shoes. I'm trying to think like retail. There's some things that you get around $250.
A nice restaurant meal at Capital Grill.
Nice restaurant meal. A big bar tab.
Wow.
A lot of pull tabs.
Come on. Can you?
That's actually, I think $250.
Wouldn't that be the whole thing is full of
$1,000? $250 is the most I've gotten on a pull tab ever.
My
good
grandson,
day.
Through his mom, got $500 once.
Woo! Did you let him keep it?
I have no idea. Probably.
All right.
The Max is a dealer, wheeler and dealer.
So. What else would you just throw down?
$250.
Strip club? Silk?
I don't go to strip clubs. Good question. Were you trying to put me on the spot there?
No, not at all. Yeah. Just saying. One has spent that much money probably at Silk.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It's one of those questions that people ask other people. And like, do you ever expect a serious answer when you've been to a strip club? Who's going to answer that seriously?
On the radio or in life?
Radio, life.
In life, I think absolutely.
Part of your partner, spouse, whatever.
At least the people I'm friends with. I don't think, and maybe this is a generational thing. I'm not sure there's anyone my age who has gone to a strip club who would be like, no, I've never gone to a strip club.
So
I think they would, maybe not on the radio.
They're
but
saying
like
yes,
in,
they
like,
have
yeah.
gone.
I don't think there's anyone who would have shame around saying that they have gone.
I feel like there's less than there used to be. Is that a correct assumption?
I don't know. You're older than I am.
I know.
There used to be a lot more?
I think so. Yeah.
There's still a lot of billboards up and down the highway of
yeah, where is that
girls,
stretch
girls,
where
girls.
We see those all? Like Western Wisconsin? Like I think
La Crosse. I think 43, 94.
We should ask the congressman because he's been all over the states.
That's true. We can ask him.
That'd be deviating the conversation. I'm guessing the congressman doesn't want to talk about strip clubs. We won't ask him that question. We're going to try to pick the best audience question. We're not going to do it live. We'll pick it. We'll toss it out through the break. We'll toss it over, see what works for us. Don't forget Jeremy Janine coming up at 11 o'clock on the program, 11:06, 7, 8, whatever the news ends. Lots of local stories. It's sort of our devotion to the local piece of what we do. And Jeremy's such a great reporter, urbanwalkie.com. I had my first person, I was out at an event a couple days ago, transportation development, asked me out to Tchotchke Shop.
Oh, yeah?
Yes!
Which you still haven't gone to?
I still haven't gone to. I feel bad about that.
You should feel bad. You've been talking about it for a long time.
Why don't you, like, if you pick me up and drop me off there and then pick me back up.
Why don't we just go?
I know we should go. Let's do a video there.
You want to go tomorrow?
I can't do it this week. I'm very busy. I'm very, very busy.
What do you have tomorrow?
Tomorrow's Friday. I have things I want to get started for the weekend. I have projects that I'm doing.
Another greenhouse?
No, I'm good. Most of my planning's done, so I'm ahead of schedule on that. Just yard stuff.
Okay. You got a mulch still?
A little bit of mulching, yeah. Yeah. I bought like 10 bags of mulch over the weekend, so yeah.
I got all my mulch delivered.
I'm in the process of growing your flowers, your asters, your Shasta. You realize those are long-term proposals. They take a long time to get to maturity.
Well, how are they doing?
They're like this big. I mean, it's like it's a slow process.
Okay.
And it is only May. So be a little patient on that.
For three more days.
$250, two tickets for a Packers game.
That's a good one.
Tank of gas for a big diesel. Wow, that's a...
That's what I'm saying.
Oof.
For certain cars, that's like what it is right now to fill up.
I love this from Peter. I'm Steve's age. I've never been to a strip club. So is that's like a moment of pride for the texter. Like, yeah. I've never been to a strip club.
Good. That's great.
I can't say that.
$250, a Wii Energy's partial bill.
Yeah.
That wouldn't cover our full... Our last bill was a little more than double that.
Wow.
$400.
I had a couple 400 bill. Plus bills this year. And that's actually part of the topic.
And then I think our water bill was $200. And so it's like, this is...
Well, you've been watering a lot.
I have been watering a lot. That's true. That is a good point.
What else we got? Partial bill. A nice bowling ball cost $250. Is that what
really?
They cost? Wow.
I didn't realize they were that expensive.
My moment of pride in my life is I picked up a house ball at one of our... It must have been a couple years ago. And I bowled a 262 real bowling with a house ball and house shoes.
What's real bowling?
Not bumper bowling or not nine pin.
Okay.
Bumper bowling, you should always have a 262 because it's pretty simple. It keeps putting it back in the lane. But not nine pin, they give you the strike if you get nine.
Real I know, bowling, that's what we did for Bowling for Babies.
Yeah, 262. Real game.
Fun fact, the guys who won Bowling for Babies and got my four Packer tickets chose week 18.
The last game.
The last game. So good on ya.
You're going to freeze your butts off, but enjoy that game. All right. All right. Welcome back to Point Taker 640 WTMJ on this Thursday edition in studio. He is the only candidate on the Republican side for the nomination for governor, Congressman Tom Tiffany. Welcome to the studio.
It is good to join you this morning.
Yeah, you got a busy schedule. You're all over the place.
Yeah.
How often are you going back and forth to D.C. right now?
It is a big state. There's no doubt. So this week we're off.
Okay.
We'll be going back next week. So like, in June we'll be in like for 3 weeks. We ended up being in about 30 weeks out of the year, that we are in Washington, D.C. So, yeah.
All right. I'm going to get this question out of the way because I don't want to spend a lot of time looking back at 2020, but a lot of texters asked me to ask this question and it's something that I'm curious about. I don't understand my fellow Republicans' obsession with 2020. The president has won two elections. He didn't win that one in 2020, but some people just want to keep looking back on all of these issues related to 2020, whether something was done improperly, questions about voter fraud, which I've done a lot of research on voter fraud. It doesn't happen that often. And most times when it does happen, it's prosecuted. Give me your thoughts on 2020. What went on? And let's not spend a lot of time on it, but tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've answered this question so many times and it's really consistent. There were a few improprieties here in Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania was bad. I mean, that's part of the reason I voted.
Give me an example, a direct example.
So, like in Wisconsin, the Dane County clerk in 2020 said that you can just declare yourself to be indefinitely confined. Remember, this was COVID.
Right.
He said, just declare yourself indefinitely confined. He did not have the legal authority to do that. Second thing is the Zuckerbucks that came in, $15 million, and the Green Bay mayor hired a political operative from New York City to come and help them in Green Bay. They ultimately forced the city clerk and elected official out. It should only be elected officials that take care of these elections. That political operative, not elected, ended up with three of the four keys to the central count. Now, that doesn't mean that the election was not...
Well, that's my question.
Yeah, so that doesn't
the
mean fraud.
It doesn't mean that, but you have these improprieties and people continue to ask questions about it. What I'll be focused on as governor is to make sure that we have good elections, that it's easy to vote, hard to cheat.
So... What changes do you think we need to do from where our elections are right now?
I think one of the things is a bill that we've passed through the House of Representatives, including the author from right down here, Brian Stile, is to make sure that you are a citizen of the United States. Make sure that there's documentation that you
Didn't
are a citizen.
Didn't we just pass that? Didn't we just pass we that as a, it. As a referendum? As a statewide referendum?
I believe that was an advisory referendum. So it does not have the force of law.
You're talking about a national requirement.
Right.
What does that mean specifically?
But each state would have to have two things. They'd have to have photo ID, which we have in Wisconsin.
Right.
And the second thing is clerks would affirmatively have to make sure that a person is a citizen of the United States.
So that gets into, the big thing with that as far as like women who've changed their names or people who have changed their names and tracking down, especially if you've lived all over the place like me, tracking down your birth certificate. I didn't change my name, so I don't have to worry about that. Yeah. But what is your response as far as how many more hoops it causes some people to have to jump through in order to prove, like, find that documentation?
So I think it's, first of all, it's important to make sure that we know that people are citizens of our country. That's number one. That's why it's being done. But women do, when they change their names, go through the hoops to have to change a variety of things to make sure that people know who they are. Women do this all the time, and they can't. I know.
I'm just saying it's an unfair burden as far as who, like,
but
having
it's
to,
not
I have to
just
do, I would have to do more than another person potentially if I had changed my name in order to vote.
Sure. So so women would have that requirement that they have to they'd have to find their birth certificate or whatever. But women do that now when they change their names for other purposes, and it's ultimately meant to have good election integrity. And we would make sure that there are means in place so that it's as easy as possible to be able to fulfill that requirement.
Let's pivot to some more recent news.
Yeah.
2020 is 2020. I believe that Wisconsin elections are fair and square. And I know a lot of county clerks and a lot of elected officials.
And by the way, those clerks do a terrific job across the state of Wisconsin.
Underappreciated. I think we both agree.
They are.
All right.
Underpaid?
Probably underpaid.
Without a doubt.
You opposed the tax relief bill.
I did.
As did enough other people to make sure that it didn't pass. Overwhelming public support. Did you see the MU Law School poll? I talked about it the other day. 4 out of 5. We can argue about the details. I said this last week. We are in this mindset as elected officials. I'm not one, but I used to be one. We want everything to be perfect. And we find ways to not vote or not support things that are compromised positions on bills. And we throw them away. Give me your take on why you think this is a bad bill.
So I answered the question as if I were the governor of the state of Wisconsin and I was negotiating this deal, there's a $2.5 billion surplus. We should return all of it to the taxpayers. And here's why we should return all of it, not just part of it. You look at the last budget in 2025, we increased, in the state of Wisconsin, increased spending $15 billion, went from $99 billion to $114 billion, biggest increase in a long time. So the state is getting plenty of money. And now there's a surplus of $2.5 billion, less than 20% of that increase of $15 billion. It is the least we could do for taxpayers. But I would have negotiated a different deal. I would have made sure that we ended the 400-year property tax increase, and I would have returned all of the surplus to the people of the state of Wisconsin, which is different than the Democrat governor candidates who were critical of it, and they said they would
except
have voted.
Except Missy Hughes.
Yes. They said they would have voted no on it. They would have voted no because they wanted to keep all of the surplus in Madison. I want to return it to the tax.
Well, that's because there's also a projection as far as what the deficit could be coming into next year. And so are you worried about that at all?
So I'm a deficit hawk, and I want to make sure we spend within our means, but we can do both. We can return money to the taxpayers while also balancing the budget. I mean, remember, we went from $99 billion to $114 billion. I sat on the Joint Finance Committee a decade ago. The first budget that I did, I think we spent about $72 billion. So think about it. In 10 years, we went from $72 billion to $114 billion. The state does not have a revenue problem. It has a spending problem.
Congressman Tom Tiffany joining us in studio for the rest of this half hour. Great stuff to talk about, including the affordability question. We'll get to that. Gas and groceries, big stuff. Chris and Steve, point taken, 620 WTMJ. Congressman Tom Tiffany joining us, candidate for the Republican nomination for governor. Big primary coming up in August. I know we got a ton of questions because we want to kind of rapid fire these, but I'll let Kristen lead off. Affordability.
That's the big thing, right? Things are very, very expensive. We were talking about we energies and water bills. So I think the big thing is healthcare, right? Everyone you talk to, no matter what kind of money you're making, unless you are lucky enough to have an employer that covers your entire premium, we are all feeling it. So what is your actual plan to lower, with the levers that we have as a state, to lower healthcare premiums?
Yeah, let me just touch on federal just a little bit, because we put some provisions in the Big Beautiful Bill last year. And one of the misnomers that's out there is that Medicaid is being cut from the federal level. There are no cuts. It's going to go up 30% over the next 10 years, federal to state.
Why is there that confusion?
I voted for that. Well, because it's deliberate. It's politics, Steve. That's what.
Still, I mean, the numbers are the numbers.
I had to correct an interviewer this past week who said, why are there these cuts? No, There's a 30% increase in Medicaid spending under what we did with the bill last year. So what are we going to do? Actually, Wisconsin is going to do quite well with their Medicaid spending now because of the hospital assessment went up in with the actions of the legislature and then what we did federally. So there's actually going to be more money coming in that regard. But the principles that I live by in regards to healthcare, choice, give people more choices, let's have more competition, and most importantly, let's have more transparency. We need to make sure that our healthcare providers are providing full transparency so you know how much procedures are going to cost. I don't know if you're like me and my wife, when we open the bills up around the kitchen table, when we get a healthcare bill, we're just guessing how much we're going to be paying. And I think most people are that way. We got to have full transparency if we're going to have better competition. Also, we need reform of the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit managers. Those are the middlemen between the manufacturers and us, the customers of pharmaceuticals.
The president has promised he would bring these costs down for medications. That's not happened.
So some of it is happening now
in
the first half of 2026. So they are forcing the drug manufacturers. So you look at the foreign countries. They've been able to get discounts, and we pay the freight. We've been basically paying for pharmaceutical R&D for the last few decades. Now, with some countries, the president has forced some pharmaceutical manufacturers, the price you pay in Switzerland or France, you have to offer the same price to Americans. And that's starting to kick in now with the whole Trump RX.
So going back to what you said about as far as choice, what do you mean when you say choice? Like, how would you improve choice when it comes to healthcare?
Provide more choices. One thing I hear from so many doctors that would like to start their own practices, but they're really tied in to the big systems at this point. And so something called direct primary care. I've used a direct primary care doctor, and I'm using another one now after the two I had retired. And that is one example where you have basically your family doctor come back and be able to have primary care services that are affordable. For example, there was a plan with the doctors that retired that I used where for $75 a month, you could get all of your primary care. So
like a subscription model?
For less than $1,000 a year, you could get all of your primary care. Now, that doesn't cover procedures and things like that. You know, let's say you have cancer, whatever. That does not cover that. But at least for your primary care, you could get it affordably. We need to foster more of that. And that's why that's what I'm talking about when I say competition and giving more people more choices.
So is that state level or federal level to do something that?
It could have both levels can help fix that. But the state can take action to allow these direct primary care models. It hasn't been done. Senator Mary Felskowski, my state senator, is a big champion of this. And I would look forward to working with people like her to make it happen.
Let's take one more break. We've got a few minutes remaining with the congressman from the
Northern. Many questions are we not going to get to?
We're jamming them in. We'll rapid fire you after the break, including a fun one, too. We'll get to all of that after this on 620 WTMJ.
All right. We have very little time left with Representative Tom Tiffany running for governor. So let's get right into it. So yesterday you said the difference between wants and needs when it comes to the budget, and needs being education, healthcare, and transportation. We're just talking about healthcare. So let's talk about education. So you were promising both a property tax freeze while also saying schools need better outcomes and great teachers should be paid more. So how do you do that math?
Yeah, so you look at a decade ago when I was in the legislature, we froze property taxes and we helped from the state level. But we should pay good teachers more money. We got to make sure teachers are safe in the classroom. It is one of the number one reasons why teachers are leaving the profession, and we need good teachers. We need to set higher standards. We saw what happened with the Department of Public Instruction. They actually reduced standards here in Wisconsin. Parents find that unacceptable, and we need honest report cards for parents to be able to review.
All right, complete shift. Independent voters in the state of Wisconsin. And to win this election, you have to get their votes.
Yes.
How do you appeal to an independent voter in the state of Wisconsin? Conservatives love you. They don't know you, or they don't know enough about you. How do you get those votes?
The issues that we're talking about, education, people expect their kids to be educated well. It doesn't matter what their political persuasion is. We are going to make education better in Wisconsin. An issue Kristen highlighted nearly a year ago that is she's proving to be a genius.
I'll take that.
In regards to data centers. Data centers is a huge issue. The conversion of farmland is a big issue.
Where do you land on data centers? Do you support slowing down how quickly everything's moving?
The conditions that are, you got to put conditions on it. First of all, there should not be additional subsidies like Governor Evers put in place a couple years ago. It should not raise people's electricity rates. There should not be non-disclosure agreements. This should be done open and honestly in the public, and you should make sure that there's local input.
I want to ask a couple of things. The fun one will be at the very end, but transportation. I spoke to a transportation development group the other day. I was the MC for the event. I'm a fan of building connections between communities across this state, and I people laugh at me when I say I'm a fan of freeways, because I-94 South, I-43, soon to be the stadium freeway, the zoo interchange, these make commerce and tourism work. What would you do with transportation? You've talked about it a lot.
Kristen talked about wants and needs. This fits under the category of needs. Transportation and infrastructure need to be upgraded, updated. We need to make sure we take care of it. Otherwise, I mean, it just creates problems for all of society. So it's really important we do that. In my budget, I will put more money into transportation to make sure that we have a good transportation.
So for you,
system.
When you say transportation, does that mean roads?
Yeah, it's roads.
How do you feel about rail?
We need to upgrade rail also. I mean, I think about, I'm talking about industrial rail.
Not
high speed rail.
No.
So you're still no transit between Milwaukee and Madison still, ASA?
No, we're not going to do that. Even though I voted for more money when I was in the legislature for more money for the Hiawatha to Chicago, I think.
Why wouldn't that work between
Milwaukee
and Madison?
Because that already exists. Because Chicago has how many people? 3-4 million people?
Well,
Dane
County is growing like crazy.
Dane County is really great. I mean, there's a lot of people who go back and forth on that.
All right, a fun one.
So anyhow. Yeah.
All right.
But freight rail, we're going to put more money into freight rail.
I have full awareness you're not going to answer this question. What Democrat do you want to face in the election?
I mean, whoever comes out. I mean, you look. I mean, Francesca Hong's out today saying that she's going to arrest ICE if they come into the state of Wisconsin.
Candidates say a lot of things.
Yeah. So
who's a serious candidate?
No, I'm whoever runs. I mean, there's very little difference between all of them. They have taken this socialist view. I mean, you have candidates out there that want to raise property taxes by $2 billion. Another one wants to do the budget behind a curtain.
But that should make your life easier if you're running as a Republican and conservative. Right?
Hey, it's a big state. I'm going to take care of business that the people of the state of Wisconsin want me to. I'm not focused on my opposition until I find out who it is in August. I'm focused on how do we make Wisconsin one of the great states in America once again, because we're lagging at this point. I do not want to stand up like Minnesota or Illinois.
Tom Tiffany, representative from northern Wisconsin, serving the great state of Wisconsin, candidate for the Republican nomination for governor. Thanks for coming in. We always appreciate
that.
Thanks, Kristen. And
let's do it again.
We'll do it again.
All right. Quick
75
break.
Days till the primary.
Yeah.
But you don't have
up.
The face, so you're fine.
There you go. Yeah, you got an easy street. All right, quick break for news.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken.
Everybody wants to be closer.
Hello, Jeremy. I was gone last week, so I haven't seen you in a little while.
Great to see you. Glad you're here and not on a jury.
I'm not on a jury.
You promptly texted me. You're like, you have a parking garage with free parking blocks away.
True.
And I was running late, so that was not an option.
One of the things I learned from your discussion yesterday, and this is a suggestion to all the listeners out there, 2018, 2019, I wrote a evergreen, still very popular article about what jury duty is like, what to expect, what to bring. You hit on some of those things. Bring the laptop, bring the book. Expect to have a lot of downtime.
A lot of downtime.
And then it's a lot of hurry up and wait at various points, which you definitely encountered.
I did. So there we go. All right. Talking about someone judging someone's fate. How's that for a segue? All right. Tell us the update. Where are we right now? With Marty Brooks and Wisconsin Center District.
Well, again, we're in the hurry up and wait to reference what we just talked about, but I think this is coming to a head based on discussion with sources very quickly. My understanding right now, so setting the stage, Marty Brooks, the head of the Wisconsin Center District, runs the Baird Center, Panther Arena, Miller High Life Theater, funded by a combination of taxes, so it's a public entity overseen by a 17-member board, that's a big board, mm-hmm. but it's got state appointees, it's got county appointees, it's got city appointees, and that board seems to be moving in the direction of getting rid of Marty Brooks for concerns that go back several years now that all kind of snowballed from, one, this alleged pinch that Jose Perez alleges he was pinched in the butt by Marty Brooks back in November. That seems to be a side thing now, not really the genesis of, it is the genesis, but not the driver of what's happening. And the big thing seems to be this Hundon partner study and then some other things that an investigation into Brooks has turned up. I'm told there's negotiations going on right now that maybe Brooks will resign because there are big questions about
a different investigation that has nothing to do with the Jose Perez.
Different investigation.
And is that more like the parts of the job investigation? Like, do we have any idea what they're investigating?
It sounds like there was just kind of an audit done and some things turned up. And I should be very clear, none of these things are criminal.
Okay.
But there are concerns turned up and now there's questions of terminating him for cause, terminating him for convenience. And that's a $250,000 question because Brooks would get a 6-month severance package.
Is it? So are you saying it's for performance, not conduct? Is that what you're sort of saying?
No, I think it's for conduct and performance together, but not criminal conduct. I want to be very clear about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could do a lot of things bad and not be criminal, but I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I'm clear what you're saying. You're saying that he will be removed at some point.
Yes, that's coming to a head. Either they're going to terminate him or he's going to resign, is what I'm told.
So now another question becomes, how much do we still have to pay him?
Correct. So if he's terminated for cause, then you owe him nothing. If he's terminated for convenience, and this is spelled out in his 3-year contract,
right,
then he's owed 6 months severance. He makes about $450,000 a year, roughly.
Who's the arbiter of that? So if they fire him for cause and he wants to challenge it, where does that go?
That then becomes the big question. If it becomes back to the courthouse, and you could end up on a civil jury.
Oh, great.
What's his length of contract?
He has a 3-year contract that runs through. He's about to enter. I got to do math in my head quick. He's about to enter the third year of the contract.
All right. So at some point, and maybe this is a more longer-term conversation, it becomes cheaper to just pay it and get it over with, I guess.
Yeah, my understanding is these are discussions that are happening. They're fluid at the
moment.
What's
the timeline, then, if you know?
The timeline, I'm told, is within a week or two, this is all going to be resolved.
Okay, well, that's pretty quick.
And then, as far as a replacement, does there become like a nationwide search? Because he's not a Wisconsin guy, right? Like, he worked at Madison Square Garden for a long time.
Right,
so I'm guessing they went out and got him to come here.
Right. When he was hired in 2018, he had actually come directly from St. Louis, but he's a longtime Madison Square Garden employee. I think that's likely of kind of how you'd look for someone that came next. The job in 2018 was really appealing because you were about to build a new convention center. He came and executed on that. There seems to be no question about building the Baird Center. A lot of the questions stem from what comes next in the process about building that convention center hotel. So then you get the question of, well, who wants to come into that job?
All right, let's take a break. Lots more to get to with Jeremy Janine. UrbanWalkie.com, and because somebody asked me about it on Wednesday when I did an event, the famous tchotchke shop.
UrbanMilwaukeeTheStore.com, but please come shop in person, 755 North Milwaukee Street, Milwaukee and Mason, right near the Hotel Pfister Hotel Metro.
Soon to be the setting for a great Kristen and Steve video.
He can't do it tomorrow, though.
I can't do it tomorrow. I'm very busy this week.
Maybe next week.
Maybe next week. All right, quick break. Jeremy Janine. He's our Thursday guy, 11 o'clock hour most weeks. Except if I'm on vacation or Kristen's on vacation or Jeremy's gone.
No, he's here when one of us is on vacation.
Yeah, you probably hear more than, well, never mind. Anyway, so let's shift gears here, and I'm quickly going to look at my notes.
Youth prison.
Yes, youth prison.
Well, yeah, we're going a little bit off the outline. Here we are. This is a good story. A site once targeted for a youth prison is going to be used to build trucks. That was the headline Bruce Murphy made out of my article yesterday. On, not 66 in Tetonia, 6600 North Tetonia Avenue, which, for those of you that don't have the addresses memorized in your head, that's the intersection of Tetonia and Mill Road. Mm. So very far north in Milwaukee, not incredibly far west, but very far north. It's right by the police and fire academies, if you're for some reason familiar with that as a landmark. And Steve, as a, I believe you're a Catholic as a kid.
Yes.
You can probably know that this was once a high school that was there years ago.
Oh, yeah. Which one was that?
I can't remember.
Pianono, was it?
It could have been. Somebody
smarter than me and a better Catholic will know that.
but the good news today, is 2019, Tony Ever says, hey, we're going to build our youth prison here on this vacant site.
This was to replace Lincoln Hills?
To replace Lincoln Hills. And that that did happen in Milwaukee, but that was like kind of a unilateral decision from the state. Then Alderman Ashanti Hamilton, representing the area, was like, no, we don't, like, we want a discussion about this. We're not saying no to the project. We're saying no to, like, right here and the way you did it. And that facility is almost about to open now near 76th and Carmen on the far northwest side. Milwaukee County also looked at this property for a site that ended up ultimately expanding its Val Phillips Juvenile Justice Center. That just opened back in, like, March. And now Maxon Industries, which is a company none of us know, but anytime we get in a car, we're probably benefiting from their work. They're expanding their facility that's on Mill Road into a portion of this site. They make huge stuff that weighs at least 80,000 pounds to haul and move concrete. It's a small Milwaukee company that's been here since the 70s, but they've helped expand the Panama Canal. They just helped rebuild Interstate 43.
So heavy industrial vehicles.
Heavy industrial vehicles. The part of the reason they need the site is they don't make the vehicle from the ground up. They buy an off-the-shelf vehicle and drive it in that weighs 80,000 pounds. So it's huge.
Yeah.
And then they outfit it with their equipment, and you can see all that. There's 17 different things, I believe.
Maxon
Industries.
And any idea
what does an 80,000-pound vehicle look like? Is that like a semi? Smaller than a semi?
Around that size. Yeah, the article has a photo, but we're thinking like huge things to move lots of concrete. There's the... I'm going to call them small, but they're still big. The traditional concrete mixer you see, these are like super-sized versions of that.
Okay.
And they have about 30 employees. This expansion, they're buying land the city acquired in tax foreclosure, will add 15 employees, so 50% growth. They continue to look to expand. More than 60% of their business is actually overseas.
I know I was going to ask you. Somebody asked me about this, and I said, I'll ask Jeremy about this. So we often talk about the U.S. job numbers. Is there a compilation of Milwaukee County jobs or City of Milwaukee jobs numbers year to year that we could say, oh, we're adding jobs or losing jobs? Does that exist, that data?
Yes, but it's not produced at the interval that the monthly job report comes out at.
Right.
So you can look at, here's the Census Bureau says there's this many jobs, or the Bureau of Labor.
Because our population's declined in Milwaukee.
Correct.
But I'm curious if the business sector has grown or shrunk.
Wisconsin Policy Forum just came out with a new report that said, like, where the job growth has been is mostly in companies under 500 people.
No surprise. They do great work there. Maybe get them on.
I thought you meant the companies under 500 people. I was like, all of them?
Fill the room. Now, the texter says that that wasn't what I said. It was Madonna High School?
That matches what the property record says.
So the pop singer had her own high school. I'm just kidding. See, there's that bad Catholic thing.
There you go.
Save your text. I was just making a joke there. We'll take an early break. There's a ton of... You have too many stories for the allotment of time.
I was concerned this was a thin week. Here we go.
No, it's not. It's never a thin week.
Never thin.
UrbanMilwaukee.com. You can find their great reporting. If you want to know what's happening in Milwaukee City County and surrounding areas, that is your best bet. And the subscription is, what, $99 a year, $9 a month. So pretty cheap.
Absolutely. Please sign up.
If you wait to 414 week, which I screwed up.
Don't wait. Don't wait. That's
cheap,
a long time
affordable.
Away. Sign up now.
Affordable.
Just like the tchotchkes.
It's a great value.
Great value. UrbanMilwaukee.com. Quick break. Jeremy Jean, UrbanMilwaukee.com, joins us every Thursday in the 11 o'clock hour. So if you want to hear about what's going on in our great city, Jeremy, this story, I'm going to just say it. What the flock?
What the flock, indeed. And before we go there, I want to pause and talk about one of my favorite Milwaukee events is coming up this weekend. And Kristen's husband ended up acquiring it a couple of years ago. The Locust Street Festival, which
was this
is great.
A plant? Did she plant that in your head?
Oh, no. All the last week, people have been, what are you doing this weekend? Beer run.
Okay.
1.6 miles, about one full beer. I'm going to give out two free pieces of advice right now. Well, three, I guess. If you haven't started training, you're absolutely fine. Most people walk this race.
Yes. Yeah.
Two, when you do finish the race, if you're running, turn around and go back to the last beer stand because it's quite the party.
Give you beer as you run.
Yeah, so there's four stops.
What?
I'm always manning the first stop. Last year, we had the unfortunate mistake of having paper cups instead of plastic cups because Mike was trying to be good for the environment. But to fill up 1,000 cups in time, the paper cups started disintegrating. So it was a disaster. So now we have plastic cups. There will be plenty of beer ready to pick up at the first stop. There's four stops in total. And it's a 1.6 miles. Some people sprint it, and sometimes I always question if those people actually drink their beer.
We absolutely do.
We need to make sure that everyone actually drinks their beer, and they're not just doing it for time.
Is there a beer sponsor?
Yeah, Lakefront. No, not Lakefront. Black Husky.
You got to get that right.
Yeah. Black House. Well, it used to, for a long time, it was Lakefront. Okay. And now it's Black House Kitty.
That's good beer to get on.
And my other free piece of advice is it's a very child-friendly festival and event. And my daughter will be there with root beer. And I suggest you bring yours as well. Stroller-friendly run.
Because, yes, after the beer run, then it becomes Locust Street Festival, which is very fun. There's stages up and down Locust Street. Lots of food. Lots of vendors. It's a very fun River West event.
What would a guy from Oak Creek get out of the Locust Street Festival?
Well, one, phenomenal people watching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Signet
good,
Snowpack
good music.
Is there.
Sunshine.
I like sunshine. Food.
Beer.
There you go. Those three things right there.
I mean, what do you ever get out of a street festival?
Very personal question, Kristen.
Oh, sorry.
But right. What the flock? Let's get back to what we're here to talk about. Flock, the controversial international camera company. So they make license plate reading technology. These aren't videos that you can watch, at least in how the city of Milwaukee uses it. It's just grabbing license plate numbers as cars drive by. There's a network of 31 cameras in Milwaukee. There's cameras in many other cities. There's been concerns about the Trump administration's ability to kind of use the city of Milwaukee's cameras and other cities' cameras, which has caused places like Appleton and Oshkosh to back out of it. City of Milwaukee Police Department says, no, we like our flock cameras. They've allowed us to solve the street takeover, alleged ringleader arrest. A city employee was shot at, and they were able to use the cameras, according to Chief of Staff Heather Huff, to track someone down. But they've had problems with misuse. They had about 400 employees, both officers and civilian employees, authorized to use the system. Made headlines in February. One employee got charged criminally with misusing the system to track a romantic partner and their ex-boyfriend. That only was discovered because of a complaint filed, because there was a public database you could search if anyone had searched for your license plate in Flock. That database actually doesn't even work anymore. But in the meantime, MPD implemented a fairly rigorous audit process that looks for any statistical abnormalities in, hey, that Scafidi guy, he's searching a lot for the same license plate. Why is that? And then they look at it. And they found at least one more incident that is an ongoing investigation. We're 3 weeks in at minimum. And MPD, as of this morning, is not commenting on who's being investigated and for what. And at least two employees in April, as a result of the audit process, had their access to the system removed.
Which is good oversight. So is the MPD position, when used properly, we like it, it works well?
Yes.
As long as it's not being abused.
Right.
Yeah. And I think most of the public would probably support that same thing. Yeah.
And the question is then, how do you create that system of preventing abuse? And actually, James Lewis, the risk manager, has developed what my limited business school training seems like a really robust auditing process.
And I've reminded people, I think I talked about this when Kristen was off for that full week, technology's not going away. We're going to utilize technology. We're not going to pretend it doesn't exist because of these sort of outlier stories. But you have to make sure these things are used properly, because I would hate to see someone being attacked, abused, whatever.
Stalked
because of something that we're paying for. So we sort of given that financial endorsement to the process. So that would be my worry about that. More to come on this story from MPD?
Absolutely. And you hit on the head that there's other technology issues that will continue to crop up. We saw MPD pause facial recognition. So more to come on what this Flock investigation of the individual reveals.
All right. Tease the next half hour. What should they be listening for?
We got lots about housing coming up. We got stuff about Crowley for governor. And then we just got lots of other Milwaukee stories.
Milwaukee stories. That's why he's here. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. It is a great read, and they're reporters, the Murphys of the world, the Janines of the world. Who else you got working there?
Sophie Bullock covering food and drink. Graham Kilmer.
How many employees do you have?
There's five of us that are full time, and then a number of freelancers.
Yeah. And they all work in the shop like you do?
Well, no one works in the shop doing news, but we're upstairs making magic happen.
Yeah. You said you were a janitor, though.
Well, yeah, I have to empty the garbage bins. They haven't found someone to pay to do that.
They give you garbage bins?
Our landlord? Sure. Yeah.
Where are you on leaves? Just kidding. The whole story again. We actually stayed away from leaves today, which is a good thing, although I just brought it up. All right, we got all that come up with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Just check it out. It's a pretty great resource for all things Milwaukee County, Milwaukee City, and all the stuff we talk about every Thursday in the 11 o'clock hour.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi to my, what do you call it, radio left?
Radio left.
Radio left. And Jeremy Janine to my radio right. And now we're talking about the Milwaukee's Highgrove crackdown is slow moving.
So stuck in the slow lane here. In late March, city attorney Evan Goyke and then Common Ground Southeastern Wisconsin jointly announced what I said was a crackdown in the court of public opinion and in the court of law, that they were going after David Tomlin's Highgrove Holdings. They were targeting 138 properties in particular. Those are properties, not units. So many of those are duplexes. So we're talking about residences for hundreds of people that were allegedly in poor condition. Common Ground, which is previously targeted the Housing Authority, is now focused on MMSD and Veolia in particular, wanted the conditions to approve and was highlighting them. The city attorney was using his power to target a receiver, which would be the court saying, okay, we think you're a public nuisance. We're appointing this third party to come in and manage your properties because there were thousands of code violations and inspections over a period of several years. And it seemed like the saber rattling was happening in late March and things were going to happen quickly. And there was a 60-day shot clock the city attorney was going to put under action. And now here we are in late May and things have barely started. And part of that's because when the city attorney went after David Tomlin and Highgrove Holdings, a number of lenders came out of the woodwork because Highgrove could lose its properties in this case. So the lender said, no, we have like a secured asset here we need to protect. There were two big names that came out of that. Locally, F Street Group, led by Scott Lurie, has a number of short-term mortgages on properties. And the money they gave for the mortgages came from a little-known Florida company called Brighton Asset Management with a well-known investor named Mark Lazary as one of the investors. That is the former co-owner of the Milwaukee Bucks backing that company. And then that came quickly. They self-identified saying, hey, we have loans to them. Let's make sure we have standing in this case. And then the city of Milwaukee had to go find a number of other entities and individuals. Like there's a couple in California I found, a literal couple, husband and wife. They look to be relatively newly married that they have a mortgage on like one or two houses out of these 138. So these aren't all just big investors. It seems like, according to my discussions and review of court records, that they finally identified all these parties so things can start moving. But there's another issue ongoing, which is that U.S. Bank, even prior to the March saber-rattling and legal filing, had a foreclosure action against several dozen of the properties. And if by May 29th, which is tomorrow, if Highgrove has not raised $30 million to recapitalize their business, which, I mean, it just seems like that's a long shot given all these other legal challenges, that U.S. Bank might step in and get a receiver or take possession of those properties, which could again complicate the city's case because Highgrove isn't involved in certain properties anymore.
From start to finish, from the first notice that there's issues to now, what's the time frame?
We're in late March, so we're 2 months in now, and the city thought it could have a receiver even within 2 months, and it hasn't even been able to start arguing that case yet. So what seemed like it could be a fast, let's get someone in charge who can make property improvements, seems like it might drag on a long time.
When you say property improvements, what are the things we're looking at?
So I have a photo at the top of the article, which is a right next to a light fixture, just a clear evidence of a leak with a roof just bursted open. We have lots of photos on our website of the poor conditions just in two of the different properties. But there were hundreds, if not thousands, of code violations that the city has found through its inspections. The city, one of the things it has achieved in the court is the access to the interior of all 138 units. That's ongoing. I expect we're going to have some really interesting stories coming out of that soon.
To be determined, and we'll see where that story goes. But it's always frustrating to me, and obviously I have a suburban perspective, but when stuff is in disrepair, not up to code, these things are processed and happen a lot quickly. We're talking a greater volume, obviously. But still, it seems like there's always a disconnect between people who have to live in these conditions or work in these conditions and these, in many cases, very rich landlords or owners who just play the game. They're very frustrating, just on a human rights.
Some might say wrong.
Yeah, it is wrong. You don't have to somewhat say it's wrong. Anyway, we'll get to lots more stories from UrbanMilwaukee.com that Jeremy and his great team are doing there. After this, on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Jeremy Janine, UrbanWalkie.com. Let's talk some development stuff, some housing, office to housing, things happening in the Third Ward. Where do you want to start?
Let's start in the Third Ward because that's an interesting project. Ann Pieper Eisenbrown has owned the Mayor Building for several years. It, up until last year, was the tallest building in the Third Ward, right on the corner of Water and St. Paul across from the Public Market. Beautiful terracotta clad building.
Now across from the tallest building.
That's right.
Yeah, 333 Water across the street is 31 stories. We're talking about an 8-story building, so it is dwarfed.
But beautiful.
Yeah, very attractive. And what's happened, we've talked about this in many other ways, is the office market has evolved, not just from the COVID-19 pandemic, but that shift's been happening for a while. There's been new office buildings built that have these wide open floor plans and floor-to-ceiling windows. This building does not have that. So going back to 2014, she started converting the lower floors into housing. She's now almost going to finish the job by converting the top two floors into housing. That'll leave the sixth floor for Regus, which provides offices on like a daily or hourly basis. Almost.
For rent.
Yes. And so that 25 apartments coming above the 60 that already exist on floors 2 through 5 there.
Luxury? What price point is she looking at?
Market rate, so higher end, what you'd expect for the third ward.
Nice views?
Probably wonderful views there, probably lake views.
Big windows?
Yes.
Big-ish windows.
Yep, so that's going to be a nice project. She's done very well with the lower levels, and she's done a number of other historic preservation projects in the city already. We'll shift to a different
area. Real quick, okay. So do we know where the office current... Like you were talking about trends, like we went from cubicles when I had an office in the old building. So like an open, where is Milwaukee at on that? I know that there's less people, you know, renting offices.
So there's a couple different things happening that I haven't really checked the hard numbers. But we know that like 100 East Wisconsin Avenue, which is one of the tallest buildings in the state, that's just disappearing as office inventory because it's getting converted to housing. That's going to boost the fortunes of other office buildings.
Right.
There's a couple of other projects in the pipeline, including the blue building across the street, the former federal building. So that's changing the market. But what you're seeing there is the Class B office space largely getting removed from the market. And then these new Class A buildings, I'm told there's still interest if it could be financed in a new office building if you can find the one tenant to make the project go.
But there's still strong interest in... let's say higher income apartments.
Yeah, higher income apartments, although not at the very top of the market.
Right.
We saw the Couture and 333 Water come online at the same time, and that proved to be too much for the market to absorb quickly. Long term, they'll do fine.
All right. What else you got?
So other end of the income spectrum, the Meineke Lofts Project, 3100 West Meineke Avenue, kind of right by where Master Lock used to be. This is actually an old Perlick Corporation building. A number of developers have tried to redevelop it. Anthony Casey now seems to have a plan to actually do it. Maria Prialetta, who was the city's affordable housing person for a long time, she recently retired. She said affordable housing projects take a lasagna approach in terms of all the layers you need to get a project financed. Casey's project is going to be no exception. He anticipates needing 10 different funding sources to make this affordable housing project go. Renovates a historic factory targeted at seniors with a healthcare focus. And then the primary story for this block, and something we'll have a lot to talk about next week, the corner of Wright and MLK Drive is the former Career Youth Development Facility. Janetta Simpson Robinson led that for years until her passing. There's a marker on the Interstate 43 actually honoring her nearby. The city owns that property through tax foreclosure now. It's weighing three different options. We're going to get a decision next week. All are different affordable housing projects with some level of commercial use in them. And it's pretty interesting commercial uses.
So when if you're going north on MLK and you're looking at the park, because it's Victory Park, Victory Over Violence Park.
Yep.
Is it the building south or north?
The building to the south. And so Victory Over Violence Park will go away as part of all these proposals, but a new park will be built.
I mean, the rendering that is on the story that you wrote is beautiful. And then, is that possible?
So the question always becomes, and to me, when you're looking at affordable housing projects, is what is the value engineering? What happens if you lose 20% of your project money? What do you cut from that pretty picture? Because that's often when we talk about the lasagna, how these come together. And that's what the Brownsville Advisory Committee was going to weigh on Monday.
He is Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Love this text. Jeremy is really a treasure for Milwaukee.
Thanks, Mom.
No, Jeremiah sent it in, which could just be a play on your name. So let's see where your text is. Check that number. Jazz. Mine might be him just pranking us. All right. Final segment. UrbanMilwaukee.com. Jeremy Janine after this. Texter chastising me for not having been to the UrbanMilwaukee.store. I'm going to get there.
Next week. We're doing it.
We're on a break.
We're doing it. We're doing it next week.
I'll try to get to it next week. I have a very busy pre-vacation week.
Like
all the extra things that I'd see. Unlike some people here, I don't just throw my work at whoever's left. I do all my work in advance of my vacation, which is a distinct difference from a lot of my teammates. And yes, I hope my boss is listening. I don't just dump it on whoever's left around. I do the work ahead of time.
So what do you have to do? Like a podcast?
Podcasts and recordings and partner stuff. I'm all in. I'm all whatever. Anyway, I got off my chest. All right. Let's wrap up with two stories.
Let's go to two different stories. I recommend you both read them yourself if they're relevant to your interest. If you're likely to vote in the Democratic primary, the one certainly will be. If you're a bus rider, this one will be. MCTS, starting in June, will restore some service cuts from the 2026 budget. If you remember, the county had lots of concerns about how it's going to close the structural budget deficit. We've talked a lot about just kind of the structure of funding in Wisconsin and how even with a sales tax, you're getting squeezed every year on the property tax levy because inflation is more than the amount the levy itself can go up. Routes 28, 33, 34, and 55 are going to come back on midday service on weekdays, and the existing weekend schedule for these routes will remain. The county proposed basically ending all those routes.
Now, where are those routes? Do you know?
Like 33 zigzags from north to south from downtown to West Allis. So the,
any of them affect Oak Creek?
Not often. Okay. Maybe 55, I think, is the Layton Avenue bus. So maybe. No, that's too far north for Oak Creek. But anyways, these are kind of the routes in the system, more suburban focused routes that have the lowest ridership. MCT has proposed cutting them. The county supervisors weren't ready to go that far. So they have this weird hybrid thing where they're only going to be in during rush hour. Now they're coming back midday for part of the year. I put this story in there, one of interest to you if you're riding those routes. Two, this is going to be something that we're going to continue to talk about, that the county, if it has a structural budget deficit, is going to end up cutting the transit system. And what's that going to look like? They've retained a consultant, Jarrett Walker, who's done work nationally, most notably in Houston, to focus on redesigning the system from the ground up with good success there. But the county is really going to have to focus on how are we actually going to fund our transit system in the future, because otherwise this conversation is just going to recur every single year.
Yes. I remember when we brought through the county bus service to Oak Creek, you know, yeah, there's always the loud mouths who say why, but a lot of people use it. I see them waiting out those stops, including in Drexel Town Square and along 13th Street where a lot of those industries are. So good stuff there. Wrap it up with Crowley, David Crowley, county executive.
The healthcare contract fiasco just is not going away. Part of that is just, it seems like there is now a divide between the county supervisors and the administration. I'm going to read a quote from Steve Taylor, who chairs the committee that oversees the issue right now. I'm again reading directly from Steve Taylor. I'm still not comfortable knowing how the hell we got here, said Taylor. And I said this in my email to County Executive David Crowley. If more people need to lose their jobs, that's fine. There's a real frustration that there isn't a complete audit and accounting yet of what happened and how it happened and who's responsible. We obviously had Tony Mays got fired. Margo Franklin, the head of HR, is resigning. But county supervisors still want more information. The Crowley administration says it's doing an investigation.
What I love about Taylor, and I've known him for 20 years, he always speaks his mind, including in public meetings. Love that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we really don't know, right? I mean, will that eventually be public as far as, like, surveying emails? And was it just the insurance company didn't reach out to Tony Mays, or he didn't reach out to them? Or, like,
We don't know. And the longer we don't know, the longer this remains an issue, and just... does not look good for Crowley for governor because it just continues to percolate.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of a behind the scenes reason why people are playing around with that story, because it hurts him, his candidacy.
I mean, Steve Taylor, I would say, is probably not a likely David Crowley voter.
No, but that's a safe assumption.
But yeah. Felicia Martin, who is a state Democratic Party member, was also critical of how this is being handled.
Yeah.
So I don't know all the backroom politics on this.
All right. We'll see you next Thursday.
I'm here.
And then the week after, I'll be
gone. I'll see you Sunday.
All right. Beer run.
All right, kids, we got to go.
See you
Bill tomorrow. And Joe tomorrow. Kristen, great hanging out with you as always. See you after.